Coming up next, Howard Holly presents Against All Odds. And now your host, Howard Holly.
Good morning, good morning. Another beautiful Saturday morning. My name is Howard Holly, and you are listening to Against All Odds, How Successful People Overcome Adversity. My co-host is Kristen Weitzel. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning, Howard.
So, Kristen, we had another great guest.
I thought you were finding a new word.
I have a new adjective. I have not come up with one yet.
I think I have a thesaurus.
Yeah, well, start using it. So anyway, our guest last week was David Alphin. And let's talk a little bit about his show.
David had a great show. He told us about his role model, who was his father, who is he was the CEO of Chanel and the president of Max Factor, and the different things that his father taught him about being successful and that he could use in his own life and his own career. And one of the things that really stuck out about David was the whole overcoming fear and jumping through the door when a door opens and you have an opportunity.
Stepping briskly through the door. Yeah.
Stepping briskly.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump.
Well, I think the point is sometimes we have opportunities and we hesitate, was what he talked about. And you're not sure if you belong. You're not sure if you can leverage this opportunity. And of course, there's some element of fear that goes along with that. And I think that's good counsel and advice that he gave.
Yep.
Yep. So I tell you what, let's talk about our guest that we have today, Mohammed Latif. Mohammed is the founder and one of the principals of Periscope IQ. They're located just outside of Philadelphia. And we're going to talk a little bit about Periscope IQ and what they do. But the reason I asked Mohammed to be on this show is mainly because of his story, probably a bit more than his company's story. I think the fact that he has this company is a great reflection of his success, but I think his story is much more interesting. Barbara and I had dinner with Mohammed and his wife earlier this year in Philadelphia, and at that time I told him I wanted to have him on the show, and it looks like today is the day. Welcome, Mohammed.
Thank you, Howard. Delighted to be here with you.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. So, Mohammed, you know, this is going to be a lot about you, but you've got an interesting story. I know you were born in South Africa. You've really lived all over the world. So why don't we start with in South Africa?
Certainly. Do you want me to share with you how is it that I happened to be here in the U.S. by way of originating from South Africa?
Absolutely.
So you're quite right, Howard. I was born in South Africa many years ago, and when I was a young lad, after having just completed at that time 8th grade, I remember being stopped by my dad in our home, and he asked if I would be interested in continuing my education outside the country.
And you were an eighth grader? You were an eighth grader at the time, Mohammed?
Yes, I just finished eighth grade.
Okay.
And I was at that time 13 years old. And, of course, given who I was and am, I simply said yes to him. And he said, great, your mom will pack you up and you will leave in 2 weeks and you are going to go to a British boarding school in the Himalayan mountains of northern Pakistan. His motivation, of course, for sending me off, apart from his value for education, mm-hmm. Was the fact that the South African government at that time had shut down all high schools for people of color.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as you know, apartheid literally means separate development, and part of the government's agenda was to get various populations in specific geographic locations. And the way to get us to move to those locations was to shut down schools,
mm-hmm.
and therefore force a long journey to continue high school. And my dad thought that a 60-mile round trip at that time was not appropriate. And fortunately, he was able to afford to send me to this boarding school in Pakistan.
Now, where were you in South Africa at the time?
In Johannesburg.
Okay, in Joburg. All right.
I lived in, yes, popularly known as Joburg by those who are familiar with the country.
Yes.
But that's where I lived for the first 13 years of my life.
So how long were you in the Himalayas?
I went to this British boarding school in the Himalayas, spent 5.5 years there, and graduated from high school, and then continued to live in Pakistan, where I pursued an undergraduate and graduate degree before I finally returned to South Africa for a brief period. I ended up spending just over 11 years in that country.
Hmm. So when you came back to South Africa, what did you pursue? You had already gotten a graduate degree. Were you in business? Did you have a job? Were you in education?
It was actually rather interesting, Howard. I had completed my graduate degree in clinical psychology and returned to South Africa to, of course, pursue a career, but could not get a job as a psychologist for fairly obvious reasons. I was clearly a person of color and consequently was not perceived as one who had the capability of being able to provide the kind of services that a psychologist was trained to provide. And I ended up working as a social worker in one of the largest slums in the city of Durban, where I spent a year with a child welfare agency, but found myself very quickly getting into trouble because of my public opposition to the apartheid system.
How did you get in trouble, Mohammed?
Well, I was sort of warned by friends of mine who were members of the African National Congress, which, as you know, is the party that's in power in South Africa today.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, they were banned from any kind of activity, and friends who were members there had told me that the security branch was looking out for me because of my public pronouncements opposing the apartheid system, and the only reason that they hadn't found me was because they had no record of me for several years and had no idea who I was. And I must confess that I was not that much of a hero and felt the fear of consequences from the security branch. This was in early 1976, Howard, that I then decided that South Africa was not the place that I wanted to spend the rest of my life, that in fact what I really wanted to do was pursue higher education. I was married at the time and had my first child, and my wife was a faculty member at a university, and told her one day upon returning from work that I was done and that I would like to travel around the world and find a place for us. And so, of course, I had no money, but I had families, and I went up to my older brothers and asked if they would help me financially to be able to leave South Africa to find a place somewhere in the world. I had no idea where I was going to go.
You had no idea where you were going?
No, sir. No, sir. Well, I had an idea where I was going to go based on the ticket that I purchased. I'd actually purchased a ticket that took me to a 36-city tour around the world, and I started my journey in early May of 76 with my first stop in Brazil, and I spent several weeks in Rio trying to ascertain whether or not that was the place I wanted to plant my flag, and of course, it was clearly not the place, so I continued my journey and arrived in New York City, followed by Washington, D.C., and then finally came to Philadelphia. I shouldn't say, I say finally because I got stuck in Philly.
So
when
you had,
I arrived,
you had what, 26, 36 cities, and you got to three and never left?
Yes, I came to Philadelphia, and as I said, my agenda was to get an education. I had very, very little money, and of course, I left my wife and my daughter in South Africa with her parents, and when I arrived in Philadelphia, I went to Temple University and attempted to find a place there and was successful. And part of that success was a function of the help that I received. And I should share the story because I think it's an important lesson that I'd like to leave listeners with about how one becomes successful. I happened to be playing tennis at Temple's tennis court.
Hold on 1 minute. Before you go to that, let's do this. Let's take a break so our sponsors can get a word in. And then let's come back and pick right up where you are. That sounds very interesting. You are listening to Against All Odds. My name is Howard Holly, and our guest is Mohammed Latif, and we will be right back. Is that what you were saying?
Let's face it, your customers are searching online. Are they finding you? Websites are drawing all the traffic. Your business needs to get better placement online and get noticed. At Marlin Consulting Solutions, located in Palm Coast, we use the latest SEO techniques to get you noticed online. I'm Jason Johnson, owner of Marlin Consulting Solutions. You can contact us at 386-957-9311 or find us online at marlincs.com.
Hi, this is Gretchen Smith of the Flagler County Chamber. Our mission is to help local businesses thrive, which is also the name of our new business-to-business magazine. Thrive is a great tool for area businesses and others considering Flagler as their corporate home. With interesting content, business highlights, trending topics, and insights you won't find elsewhere, Thrive is produced by and for Flagler County businesses. To advertise in this quarterly magazine, call the Holly Group at 386-283-5907. Let us help you thrive.
Welcome back. You are listening to Against All Odds. My name is Howard Holly. I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Weitzel. Our guest is Mohammed Latif. And just before we went into the break, Mohammed was talking about a lesson that he learned and a story that he wanted to share with our listeners. So let's pick it up there, Mohammed.
So Howard, as I was saying, I was playing tennis on Temple's tennis courts, and a person came up to me asking if I would teach him how to play tennis, and I gladly agreed to do so, but was taken aback when he asked how much I would charge. And that was a foreign concept. The idea of getting paid to help someone hit a tennis ball seemed so foreign to me. And so did not charge him, but proceeded to spend some time with him on the court. It turns out that he was a professor of business at Temple's Fox School of Management. And after having conversations with him and sharing with him my background, he invited me to go to Temple's business school with him, where he introduced me to the director of the PhD program. And after having had conversations with him, found myself a student at Temple's Fox School of Management, where I ended up getting an MBA and a PhD.
Wow.
And I must confess, had it not been for the help that this professor and at the time the director of the PhD program had offered me, I would not have been able to get the kind of education that I received, because I had no money, and so mm-hmm. I received a full scholarship from Temple.
Wow. So, Mohammed, you know, you received that help, but listening to your story, you also received help from your brothers to allow you to get out of South Africa. You received help in the warning that, in fact, you needed to leave. So you've had a helping hand throughout your life, and hopefully it will continue. One of the questions I often like to ask our guest, Mohammed, is, you know, do you consider yourself to be successful at this stage? You know, you have your MBA, you have a master's in clinical psychology, you have a PhD. I assume you consider yourself to be successful, but how do you measure that success?
You know, Howard, I think that's an interesting question, and I have two sets of criteria as I think about success. The one is the fairly obvious public expression of who one is. And so, as you've pointed out, I have graduate degrees. I've worked as a university professor. I've been tenured. I've been a dean and a vice president of institutions of higher education. I've built education programs around the world. I've received public recognition for the work that I've done. However, those are all public manifestations of success. I think that there are a deeper set of criteria that defines success. And so for me, that's the more important set that I think would be helpful to share with you.
Sure.
And I refer to them as my internal criteria. For me to be a successful human being, I measure myself by whether or not I'm able to display humility. I cannot be blinded by outward expressions of success. I cannot help but think of myself as being successful if I can always respect the dignity of any and every human being in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes out of a deep set of experiences I've had, part of which comes from my oppression that I experienced in South Africa, and to a large extent, my experience as a young person without parents. A piece that I didn't share with you earlier, after I had left South Africa at 13, I lost both my mom and my dad.
Mm.
And so here I was, as a young kid in a foreign country, surrounded by an enormous amount of adversity. And had it not been for people around me that were kind and generous, I wouldn't be where I am. So for me, this notion of being helpful to other human beings is extremely important. And frankly, it is only if you can be helpful to other human beings that you can think of having made a contribution to the communities that we're part of.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what would you say? I know you've got, you know, the help from other people. I'm a big believer in that. But what is it that got you through that difficult period? You know, you've lost both your parents, you're young, you're out on your own, and you said you had much adversity. How did you overcome that?
You know, it's an interesting question. I often think of myself in circumstances where I've experienced something very powerful. So let me share one story with you. I was, as I said, I went to a British boarding school, a fairly exclusive school in the Pakistani context, where you had bureaucrats and diplomats and, you know, senior military officials' children attending. And I can remember once leaving at the end of the school year, coming down the mountains to be met by family members. And so I saw all my friends that were received by all of their family members and the accompanying entourage that would greet them with all the joy that one would experience seeing your child after several months. And I can remember saying goodbye to all my friends and saw them depart in various vehicles going home, and found myself standing in this parking lot with my luggage, wondering where it is that I need to go because there was no one there to receive me.
Wow.
And so, of course, when you are faced with that kind of adversity, you have to stand up and step forward. And so I found myself making my way to a very inexpensive hotel. But it was a significant experience in my life because it taught me that even in the face of adversity, one has to have a set of lenses that are positive because one can overcome. And frankly, if there was one singular principle by which I live, it is that unless one has an optimistic view of life, one will end up suffering and hurting deeply. And my view is that we can all harness the internal resources that we have the capacities for to be able to overcome anything.
Mm-hmm. And I think that optimism really springs from the concept of faith.
Absolutely.
You know, having faith that, in fact, tomorrow will be better than yesterday.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And of course, I cannot emphasize the significance of other people. You know, one cannot do this alone. I am certainly not a hero. I think that to a large extent, I was able to overcome the challenges that I faced because of relationships that I had cultivated and people came to my assistance. And what was remarkable is that much of this assistance came with a lot of respect. It was not a engagement where I was simply being given things. Mm-hmm. It was truly a case of helping with mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
And that stands as a powerful value for me.
And that's
why the combination of my experience with the oppression of apartheid, the experience of being an orphan at a young age, the experience of being alone in a foreign environment, I think has given me the strength and the courage to be, one, optimistic, and two, to always be respectful and humble.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, twice you've referred to the fact that you are not a hero. I would really beg to differ. You know, heroes and our definition of them have to do with how they display courage at the right times. And I will certainly say that you are a man of courage, and that's been demonstrated by the decisions that you've made in your life and how you've approached your life. So don't beat yourself up about hero, because you are certainly a strong man of courage. So, Mohammed, I want to thank you for your time today. It's been very enlightening. As Kristen and I often say, we wish we had more time on this show to continue this dialogue, because I find it to be enlightening and insightful. So, again, thank you, sir, and I wish you the best as you continue your journey.
Well, thank you, Howard. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to further conversations down the road.
All right, everyone, we will be right back after this word from our sponsors. Take care.
Howard Holly Presents Against All Odds is being brought to you in part by Touchpoint Alliance. Touchpoint Alliance, a global alliance for communication excellence, headquartered here in Palm Coast, provides end-to-end communication solutions that help colleges, universities, and associations acquire, retain, and grow their customer base. Visit us at www.touchpointalliance.org, or for a free consultation, call us at 386-283-5906.
Greetings, Cindy Dalecki here from Marketing to Go, and we are moving to the center of town, Central Park Town Center, that is. We will be located at 145 City Place. It's the lone building near the lake at Central Park. Pearly Tail Design is moving there, too. We feel blessed to help lead the way at Town Center. This area is primed to become a high-tech corridor in years to come, and we want to be positioned to be a part of it. Let us create a buzz about your business. Reach us at 386-566-3466 or visit us online at marketingtogo.biz.
Welcome back. You are listening to Against All Odds. My name is Howard Holly, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Weitzel. And Kristen, we just finished our interview with Mohammed Latib, owner and principal of Periscope IQ. We never talked about his company. I felt that that would happen because his personal story is so compelling and so intriguing. What did you think?
I think we need another episode with Mohammed so he can tell us more.
Yeah.
I really wish he would write a book. We keep having these authors on here. I wish Mohammed was an author. I thought it was interesting how he described the internal versions of success a little differently than other people have described them.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, we've had people on the show who have talked about success as, being able to give back to people, being able to do these things, and it wasn't about money, but his was different. His was about humility and respect, mm-hmm. things that make people what we see as like decent human beings and good human beings is what he sees as being successful. I thought that was interesting how he talked about those internal things, but they were different from the way some other people have described them.
Yeah, I would say so.
Anything too, I think optimism. Mm-hmm. I almost cried when he was telling me about standing there with his suitcase and watching his friends leave, and you're at the bottom of this mountain and everyone's saying goodbye and they're getting hugs and kisses and getting in the car, and there you stand with your stuff and you don't have anywhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine, you know.
It's so easy to be broken in a situation like that. It's so easy for that to just, the weight of that to crush you. The resolve that it takes to get past that is absolutely what this show is about.
I mean, when he left South Africa, you know, he had two parents, he had a family, and they sent him off, and then all of a sudden he's an orphan.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're there, and all these other people with these wealthy families and their moms and dads, and they're probably picking him up to go on these nice vacations and enjoy the summer, and he's going to find a cheap hotel room.
Yeah. If we had a way to measure degrees of adversity, I think on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest, this would be right up there at a 10, because the type of adversity that he talked about is something that there were three levels. Number one, apartheid. And systemically, I mean, that is such a greater issue than even the segregation and problems that African-Americans faced here in the most recent generations in the United States. Apartheid, and to have participated and lived in that environment, has got to be right up there at the heights of adversity. And then also having been an orphan at such a young age, and so unexpectedly, and while you were away, and I never got a sense that he went back home. So it sounded like both of his parents passed, and it happened while he was there in the Himalayas in Pakistan. And then the third was that sense of loneliness, of being alone. I mean, that is a high degree of adversity. You know, when we talk to people, they often talk about how they rely on other folk to get through. And even he talked about it, but he went through a period of loneliness that cannot be measured.
But again, it's like he looked back and he didn't downplay it, but it was just a thing he had to get past.
Yeah.
You know, he
mm-hmm.
stayed positive and just got past these things where we look at them and we're like, that's huge.
Yeah.
I mean,
Well,
huge.
I think it was even huge then, but still the key is he got through it and he found the resolve and the ability to get through it by being optimistic and having faith. So Kristen, another fantastic interview. You're just outdoing yourself.
I know. Where do I keep getting these people?
I don't know, but I wish they'd keep coming. So let's talk about how people can continue to communicate with us.
They can like us on Facebook. We are Howard Holly Presents on Facebook. We post tips about being successful, videos, teasers about our next guests. They can follow us on Twitter. We're Holly Presents. And they can send me an email, Kristen@HowardHollyPresents.com. Let me know what you liked about the show, any suggestions you have, guests that you would like to refer to me, and maybe you'll hear one of your referrals on the air.
Yeah. You know, we often talk about driveway moments. I think this show, for me, I would characterize as a driveway show. I mean, if I'd caught the beginning of the show, I'd still be sitting in the driveway listening to it.
It's like one of those movies where you turn the movie off and you keep watching the credits even after it's, you just sit there and kind of stare at it while you internalize what happened.
Yeah, you're still digesting.
That's kind of how Muhammad's story is. It's a lot to digest and wrap your head around.
I think maybe we will bring him back. We'll see how we can do that. Well, everyone, I hope that you will have a fantastic Saturday, an absolutely unbelievable week next week. We want to wish you the best of luck in the upcoming week and overcoming your challenges both today and tomorrow. My name is Howard Holly, and you are?
Kristen Weitzel.
Have a blessed week, everyone. Goodbye.